Hello and welcome to the November 30th Credentials Community Group main call. I'm one of three co-chairs, Heather Vassant, and today we are going to talk, we're going to have our follow-up conversation on mobile driver's licenses. This topic had some really interesting discussion at IIW, the last IIW, and we began having some of this conversation in the September 28th CCG call, and didn't have enough time to get through all of the concerns and discussions. And I think even after that meeting, there were some comments that folks had to further give some insights into why certain decisions were made in the ISO standard. And Andrew Hughes, who's on the call and will be presenting today, offered to come talk to us. He's been active in the ISO community on the standards, to come and talk to us and share about what's happening with that so we could have a better discussion in order to decide how we move forward, or how can we effectively move forward with verifiable credentials and the work that's been happening with mobile driver's licenses. Also, earlier this week, Manu, maybe I guess it was yesterday, Monday, there is the desire for a new work item exploring this. And so it'd be great to maybe touch on that a little bit today, but I don't want to steal the thunder from what Andrew's conversation is about today. So I'm sure some of those things will come up in the discussion after the presentation. But if it makes sense to need to schedule a special dedicated follow-up session to today, to continue, you know, internalizing what Andrew's going to bring to the table today, then we can do that as well. So Manu, just to, you know, I don't necessarily have you slotted to talk about that as the main thing today, but I'm sure that you will bring up some comments on that.
And Heather, I have no thunder to steal. I just have lightning.
Oh, great. Okay. I prefer lightning too. Okay. That's great. I mean, I think the whole point of you coming here and being part of the community is for us to be able to have the discussions. Absolutely. And to try to, I don't know, break down the silos, but at least have a little bit of leaking and influence between the silos, which, you know, even if no one admits to it, I think because we all kind of roll in the same community, we're all influencing each other anyway. Let's see. Okay. That's the agenda review. Okay, IP note. Anyone can contribute in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. It's free to create a W3 account, and all you have to do is sign up and agree to the contributor license agreement. Call notes. These minutes and an auto recording of everything said on the call will be archived at the CCG meetings URL. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call and to take minutes. If you are logged into Jitsi, you can just go ahead and, I'm sorry, I'm just seeing, Manu, can you make that, can I call on you when we do announcements?
Of course, yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so if you are logged into Jitsi, it automatically, you can use the Jitsi chat to cue. In order to do that, you type Q plus to add yourself to the queue, and you can also add Q plus and additional information. I'm going to show you an example, to give yourself a reminder to share with other folks what you want to talk about. If you want to remove yourself from the queue, you can type Q minus. You will see the queue, the chairs use and describe potentially use some additional commands. You don't need to worry about that. If you are not on chat and you want to make a comment, just speak up and the chairs will put you on the queue. Please be brief, if possible, especially if the queue gets long, so other folks can chime in, and you can always queue plus again to respond. This meeting is held by voice, not IRC. Any off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Okay, scribe selection. Thank you, Juan Caballero, for already volunteering to scribe. Mike, just checking out, are you having Chrome issues, or what's going on with that? Or is this just a
Yeah, it's bug? Working once I jumped over to my other laptop, but just as a kind of fair warning on probably more to Manu. But if anyone else is having issues, it looks like the latest beta on Chrome is no longer passing through audio streams. So you get like the recordings on audio, but no one actually speaking or mic not working, etc. So.
Oh, that's good to know. I guess it's a good thing I didn't update my Chrome for today's call. Okay, let's see. Introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves? You can cue yourself. Do we have anyone new on the call? I think we have the usual suspects. Okay, any reintroductions? Has it been a while since anyone has reintroduced themselves? Would anyone like to reintroduce themselves? Okay, yes, Andrew will do it later. Okay, no takers. That's cool. Okay, so announcements and reminders. If you have an announcement or reminder, please put yourself on the queue. And I think, Manu, you're up next.
Yeah, just two quick ones. Just an update on the DIDCOR formal objections. The update is there's no update. It's been radio silent. We asked specifically for a timeline. It's been 78 days. It's probably been over 80 days now since the formal objections went in. Right now we're waiting for the formal objection council to form. They met 2 weeks ago, but the minutes have not been published, on that meeting yet. So we don't know, which I know is frustrating to a number of us. We will keep pushing, for a timeline. The other, announcement is around the weekly updates. So, this went out to the mailing list. So weekly updates. The verifiable credentials working group is required to, notify the CCG and any interested community, but really the CCG, about any changes we make to the specification. So we're in maintenance mode. We just published version 1.1 of the verifiable credential specification. There are a couple of advances, that we're making, just editorial stuff, but we need to let this group know. It's a manual process, and we were not keeping up to date on it. So we, had a bot do it instead. So now every Monday there will be a weekly email summarizing all the activity that happened the previous week. You can see what new issues were raised, what issues are getting comments, new pull requests, labels, and all that kind of stuff in a nice HTML email. We're just doing that for the verifiable credentials group right now and all the specs they do. But we could do it for other groups like VCEDU. If there's some things that you want to communicate to CCG on a weekly basis or monthly basis, let us know. Same thing for traceability folks or other things like that. The one thing we want to be careful of is not overloading, the emails that people are getting. So like getting 5 different weekly email updates is probably like too much. People don't want that. So we're trying to strike the right balance, but right now the only thing it's active for is the verifiable credentials, specs. That's it for me.
Thanks, Manu. I queued myself for a couple things, but just regarding like the overload of messages, is there, I'm assuming that you're using some off the shelf software or you built it yourself. I wonder if there's a way to have like an aggregated feed.
It does aggregate it right now. So it's operating in aggregation mode right now. But okay. It just aggregates all the verifiable credentials things. And we can choose however we want to aggregate. It's very configurable. It's actually a W3C tool. So it's very configurable. We just need to decide how the community wants to kind of consume that type of information.
Great. Thanks for all that. You're muted if you're talking.
Sorry, I think my audio glitched out for a second there. I was just going to say that one of the work items is going to start holding public meetings starting Thursday. The DIDPKH, pseudo method. There have been some CCG members, asking about it. So we're going to start up, meetings every 2 weeks. And yeah, we, put some meeting info in the repo, and hopefully it's not a problem to use, one of these Jitsi rooms. Yeah. That's the announcement.
Awesome. Thanks, Juan. Do you need a specific Jitsi room for these calls ongoing?
If it's to be had, yes, that would be preferable. If not, we could provide a Zoom or something. I think we just prefer to use Jitsi if possible.
Cool. Manu, is that something that can be done pretty low effort?
Yep, I can do that. I will take an action to do that.
Cool. And Juan, are you going to be keeping any kind of minutes or recordings? Or, I mean, it doesn't have to be like necessarily like heavy lift like here, but it's always good to get in a good habit of doing that.
I was going to just keep minutes in the repo. That's okay.
Okay, cool. And do you think you could send an email out to the broader list to just let folks know about that? You don't necessarily need to send like weekly agenda items or whatever, but if there's folks that are interested.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do. Just was waiting for the Jitsi room thing. I just sent an email like an hour ago, but I'll send an email as soon as
awesome.
That's confirmed.
Cool, great. And when you have something interesting to share with the broader group, let the chairs know and we'll put you on the agenda, put you on the spot to share.
Definitely.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I had like a few comments. Let's see what they were. So Manu, regarding the DIG core timeline, is there anything that us as a community can do to get a timeline or anything, you know, further help this, not to exacerbate it, but you know, isn't this a guinea pig for the process? And so is there any way we can like document what's happening or otherwise?
It's a great question, Heather. I don't know. I think we've done just about everything we can do. Like we've met one-on-one with, you know, Google and Mozilla, and we've documented what they're thinking. We've come up with, you know, counterexamples and reasons why we don't think that what they want is practically achievable. Only thing I can think of is, and this is frustrating, right? Because you have to be a W3C member to even engage in this conversation. We can talk about why that's a failure at some other time. But like, people that are W3C members, feel free to jump in and ask for the timeline as well, right? Because right now it's only like a handful of us that are engaging. It doesn't hurt. We don't want to be annoying. But at the same time, we want to be very clear that, look, it's been 80 days. You know, the director typically, historically over the last 20 years has saw these things within 3 weeks. If this is the new process, it's pretty terrible, right? Now to be fair, they're trying to figure everything out and trying to make sure that the process is fair. So I think everyone's acting in good faith. It's just, we are being guinea pig through, this process. So the only thing, Heather, I can think of is, be polite, if you're a W3C member, and request a concrete timeline for when this is going to be resolved and why it's important for your organization for it to be resolved sooner than later. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. Those are some good suggestions, and thanks again for the update. Okay, yes. Also, my comments on the VC working in the maintenance group. Manu, does it make sense for that group to come present some of those updates at this point? I know that it's been kind of in a liminal state for some time. It sounds like you've made some good progress. So are we at a point where it would make sense to come back and report back?
I probably not. I think like the updates we've provided through the mailing list are good enough. Like, I mean, it's maintenance, so it's like kind of boring plumbing stuff that's happening. Just like refinement of language and better examples and things like that. So I think the CCG has more interesting, important things to talk about than kind of, you know, the updates. But if folks on the call want an update, we can certainly provide one.
No, that's fine. Just like to check in. Also, I think we're still in announcements and reminders. I guess I should give an update about the schedule for the rest of the year. So, the CCG has two more calls. We're going to be meeting on the 7th of December. And Carrie Lemoy is going to come and talk about VC Edu and also hopefully announce the new co-chairs for that task force. And then on the 14th, Mike Prorek is putting together what should be a really interesting session. We're still getting the details together, but then we will not meet the last 2 weeks. And we'll come back in the new year. So that's the schedule, and I've updated that. And anyone who's running task forces or the additional meetings that are on the CCG calendar, if you let me know, or even if you announce to the list that certain meetings are canceled, I will generally update those in the calendar either by deleting them or putting canceled for some of them. So you can let me know about that. Okay, so progress on action items. So we don't actually have any issues to discuss today, but Manu recently added a new work item. And since it's relevant to the conversation today, maybe Manu, you can just do like a quick 5 minutes. And if it's okay, we can kind of just have our minds primed with that as we go in and have the conversation with Andrew. And I'm sure that probably the two will converge. Sound okay?
Sure. Happy to do it. Let me just get a link and I'll try to take even less than 5 minutes.
I just dropped the link in the work in the chat.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be. Yep. So as many of you know, the mobile driver's license ISO standard was published in September of this year. It basically demonstrates how, or it's a standard, it's a global standard on how you express driving privileges. There were a number of us involved in that work, some more directly than others, and we tried to get the verifiable credentials kind of work in there. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons, but that has kind of created, and that has created some concern about kind of the direction of mobile driver's licenses and verifiable credentials. Are they converging? Are they diverging? That kind of stuff. So in an attempt to try and be helpful and be concrete, a couple of us, so this is Spruce, Matter and Digital Bazaar took the MDL standard and mapped it to verifiable credentials and demonstrated an interoperability test suite that demonstrates multiple vendors interoperating using verifiable credentials, the verifiable credential API, in the what we're calling verifiable driver's license vocabulary, which is supposed to be a one-to-one mapping with mobile driver's licenses. Again, what we're trying to do is proposed that, hey, there's a totally a technical path forward here. Let's have a conversation. Let's figure out how to do this. The interop report, I'll drop a link into it, is there. And again, the hope is to try and be collaborative on this, have an open discussion about it, and, you know, thrilled that, Andrew's here to kind of talk about the background behind ODL and where it might be headed. And I think that's it.
Thanks. Thanks, Manu. Adrian, you're on the queue.
Just a quick comment. I'm wondering if anybody in our community is tracking the revocation, the months-long revocation discussion around smart health cards. And I raise it in this context because I read Manu's excellent, or the group's excellent summary of, you know, this, the stuff he was just talking about. Revocation is one of the 10 things that was mentioned in there. And I don't follow the smart health card challenge to what we're doing to the extent that they are not like MDL. They're not strictly sticking to our standards work. And I'm just wondering if there is learning to be had from their experience around renovation, revocation. Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. Anyone have a response? Add yourself to the queue. Okay, Adrian, you're getting silence.
That's okay. It's not top of my agenda. I was just mentioning it because it's been a really long haul for them to figure this out, and they still haven't.
Sounds like a hard problem. Okay, so let's move on to the main event, which I like to introduce Andrew Hughes. Andrew's been a member of the identity community for a long time. And so he offered, based on the conversations that we previously had in his work with the ISO standard, working on the ISO standards, to come in and share his perspective, so we could better move forward with understanding. So Andrew, over to you.
Thanks, Heather. I can't share my thing. I get an error.
It's not displaying. Do you have it? Do you have like the presentation and the link or like something like that that we could drop the link into, or do you?
It's a Google document. Hold on. Yeah.
Anyone else have ideas on sharing issues with Jitsi?
I see this screen share icon.
Okay, are you seeing anything for me right now?
No, but your turned off video does have a little screen share icon on it, curiously. Charles is recommending a refresh.
We could, if you share the link, Andrew, one of us can share and walk through the slides while you talk.
Okay. Who would like it?
I can do it if you'd like.
Okay, actually, I'll just, yeah, I'll,
Yeah, Andrew, it looks like you're spotlighted, like you're screen sharing, but for some reason, the, it's not sharing anything.
Yeah, I know what it is. It's, Mac permissions. It doesn't have permission to record on screen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'd have to disconnect all that stuff.
Andrew, I need access to see the slides.
Okay, there you go. And the slides are only for Manny right now, so please don't try to request permission to share. I'll give you guys a shareable version for the minutes.
Can you see?
It's too large for the display.
Oh, you might need to close the chat and reopen the chat in order to center it. It looks okay to me.
There we go. Yep. Looks good. Okay. Sorry about that. I obviously don't use Jitsi every day. So, thanks everyone for giving me a chance to talk to the group. It has been a while since I have, been on the CCG, but glad to be back. So I'm a director of identity standards at King Identity. Just started here, in mid-September. Previous to this, I was, identity standards architect at Idemia. And as you may know, Idemia does physical card printing, security cards, secure documents, driver's license printing, mobile driver's license, TSA, scanning machines and so on. And between the two roles, I've been an active participant on the ISO work group working on ISO 18013 part 5, the mobile driver's license app. Next slide, please. What am I trying to do here? So there's disconnects and, lack of information sharing between the ISO work group and everybody else. We know this. Everyone knows this. What I'm trying to do is be one of the channels to help share information, help raise awareness, help maybe identify topics that need deeper interaction. I can't give you the standard. That's not permitted. But I can talk with anyone that wants to about the details, technical details, and so on. And this is really just an introduction. Now, I did present this slide deck at IIW, and it's posted in the proceedings book. So I am not intending to go through each slide on this presentation. You'll have the deck afterwards as well. Just a note here, I'm presenting this as myself. Right? I'm not representing any company. I'm not representing ISO. These are really my opinions. I've taken some excerpts from 18013 Part 5, so you can see. I mean, there's obviously not enough to implement from, because that would not be permitted. But some of the details that are in there. Okay. So let's move on. And one more. Okay, so this slide here, and I'm going to assume that everyone's going to take screenshots as they need to take notes on their own and also from the recording. So ISO 18013 Part 5 was published in September 2021. It basically covers how a mobile driver's license app and reader can connect, exchange, and verify data, specifically over local radio or optical transmission. It's not over the internet. It wasn't supposed to be. There's a serial retrieval thing, which some of us argued against having, but it's part of the current spec. It has issues. I suspect many people know what those are with the direct access. There are other standards in this family that are being developed now. So 23220, parts 1 through 5, those are intended to be building blocks that you can use to make a profile for general purpose electronic IDs, EIDs. Now, once we're all done with the whole family of specifications, it will appear that 18013 Part 5 is a profile of 23220, right? Of course, as things are done, we're doing them backwards. We're doing the specific one for 18013 first, mobile driver's license, and we're backfilling the building blocks, right? It's torture. I recommend you don't do it this way. But it's almost impossible to avoid, as you all in the standards community know. But it's what we're doing in the ISO work group. 18013 Part 6 is test methods leading towards certification programs. Part 7 is the interesting part. We're working on what we're calling Day 2. So Day 1 is 18013 Part 5. That's being published. It's going to take several years to get updates into it, but we've always had this list of Day 2 topics that got pulled out of the scope of Day 1 so that we could actually publish something. the two most important things in day two are authenticating the holder of the device. How do you know it's the subject of the credential, right? And I'm pretty sure there's no technology to do that yet, but let's by not involving the verifier. And then also this whole over the internet, over a network transmission and non-verification, because the verification is already covered. Okay. Next slide. And please, I'm not following the cue, so please just interrupt me as you will to ask questions. Here's the scope statement.
Don't worry about that, Andrew. I'll manage the queue. And when you want to take questions, just break. Let us know when you want to break for it.
I will talk continuously in one breath unless someone stops me.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So this is a scope statement from the standard itself. And you'll notice that, strangely, or for good reason, but strangely, the issuance is not covered in ATO 13 Part 5. The main topic in ATO 13.5 is Interface 2, which is from the mobile device and the reader verifier. There is partial coverage of Interface 3 for the direct retrieval of data, but it's really about Interface 2. Next slide. Okay, so here's some summaries of some of the stuff that's inside ATO 13 Part 5. It's basically, and you will have seen this from other presentations like the one presented by UL to this group as well. So there's request and response messages, fully specified. The reader actually has to request before anything was responded to. There's an opportunity for application designers to allow the holder to interact and release individual pieces of data or not. It does support multiple namespaces and document types. Next slide. Document types and namespaces. So there's complexity in documents and namespaces, as there always is. ATO 13.5 is specifically designed to be for driving licenses, and it replicates the data set required for international driver's licenses, ISO-compliant driver's licenses. There are, however, domestic namespaces required to make driver's licenses functional in any particular jurisdiction. So AMVA, an organization of license issuers in North America, has specified a domestic namespace that has elements that are unique to North America. And those are added to the main namespace in the MDL. Okay. Next slide. And just a reminder that I'm going through this very quickly so we can actually talk about it. So the members of ISO 18013, sorry, members of ISO being national standards bodies, contributed to the writing of all of these standards in this group. You can see the general list of who's at the table, and everyone is fighting for the interests of the people and countries that they represent. There isn't really a dominant player at the table. There are some that have more pragmatic solutions that tend to get listened to a little bit more. But everyone is considering the national interest when they're at these discussions. It's not perfect, but it's not incredibly horrible. Next slide. So totally my opinion. Why is the MDL stack the way it is? So first of all is to define a mobile driver's license. There's already an ISO-compliant driver's license defined for the plastic cards. This is originally intended to be the electronic version of that. At the beginning, the issuers, the driver licensing offices, DMVs, were the primary focus. So a lot of the spec is focused on issuers. So what does an issuer need to see for security, privacy, verifiability, and so on? But strangely, not issuers. don't get me started. And after that need of a mobile driver's license specification was well on its way, that's when the discussion started to turn to, well, isn't a driver's license actually an identification document? Why don't we add stuff for that? So you'll see if you have a copy of MDL, the MDL spec, there's sort of this dual nature inside the spec. It's a driver's license for sure, but it's designed so that activities like 23220, making building blocks for general purpose, mobile EIDs, is possible, and it allows for extension and profiling into other domains. Next slide. MDL is totally going to take over the world. Absolutely. Well, no, actually MDL isn't going to take over the world because it's issuer controlled, right? And it's not really web native. I mean, it's really tied to local transmission right now. I'm trying to make the case, and I know others in this group are trying to make the case, that it's actually none of the above. It's maybe. There's going to be coexistence for a while, right? It may someday may come when there'll be a universal credential standard that is broadly adopted, broadly used, all the protocols are worked out, everything is done. And maybe at that point, driver's licenses will be regularly expressed in that format. But that's not today. So my hope, and a whole bunch of other people's hope, is that we can at minimum get coexistence and get some interoperability so that these things are useful out in the world. Next slide. Just a couple of random points. The Android team is working on the Identity Credential API, which allows interaction between the OS and the secure hardware, secure area hardware. Apple, as you've seen in the announcements, is working on enhancing Apple Wallet so that issuers can issue into the Apple Wallet and then other things can happen. We don't know what those other things are yet, and you may be aware of different articles out there that are talking about the some of the constraints and limitations of the Apple approach. I will let you read those as you will. AMVA and other organizations of driving license administrators around the world are talking about and moving towards creating these digital trust services, which are specified, well, they're described in 18013 Part 5, and they're basically analogs of the ICAO public key directory, where there's master lists of public keys for issuers to allow verification. Right? So AMVA is working towards setting up a prototype, and they may be going to production if everything seems okay. But that's ways down the road. They're working towards it. Next slide. Okay. Next one. Just a reminder of the scope. Okay. Let me just give you a slide number to keep slowly drifting forwards to. Let's take a look at slide 17. So just skip forward a few. I'll let you read the details about definitions and stuff on your own time. This is a sketch of the internal data structure. It shows that a document type, in this case, mobile driver's license, contains multiple namespaces, and there's this mobile security object thing, which has hashes for all the data elements and other metadata about the lifespan, time to live of the data package itself. Next slide. Gotta have layers. So here's some layers. Next slide. Very brief description of the data exchange steps. It's two-step, so device engagement sets up ephemeral keys, and establishes a secure connection on the same channel or a different channel, depending on capabilities on both sides. And then over that secure channel is the actual transmission. When you look at the data exchange, it looks backwards, right? From a user's perspective, the verifier takes a picture of the user's QR code, right? There's reasons I won't get into about why that is, but it's mainly to do with getting that first key to the verifier to set up the transfer. We are working on this reverse engagement idea, which to the user would look normal, where the user can scan a QR code or tap and start that way. Next slide is a wonderful flowchart. Shows where the engagement and retrieval happen with some of the basic flows. Next slide. I'm sorry for rushing through this. Just some of the security goals and functionality, how to address the various, or how to achieve the various security goals inside the specification. Next slide. Data elements. It's a driver's license, so it has all the driver's license data. There's some awkward stuff, like the whole age over, age and years sort of thing. It's really not ideal. To some degree it exists in that way, so that, the ecosystem doesn't actually have to trust the mobile device to do computation, right? We'll see how that evolves over time. Next slide. Session security features, just some highlights from the spec itself. I'm reading the slide. So the two-stage engagement, then transfer. Session data is all CBOR. Next slide. Data integrity. So this one's, this is the one that I still can't get my head around when I'm trying to think about proofs and verifiable credentials, right? So I'm hoping Manu and the team, Spruce and Matter have solved this part. I'm really looking forward to it. So the mobile security object is the hashes of each of the data elements from the issuer, signed by the issuer, and it has, the public key of the device itself. And it's transmitted along with data elements that are transmitted to the verifier. So you can do validity of any of the data elements that the verifier receives. Now, the MDL app can reply to the verifier with whichever data elements it wants to, right? So if the verifier requests every single data element on the MDL app, the MDL app does not have to respond to any of them, right? So that's why the whole MSO gets sent over with whatever data elements are sent over. And next slide. Okay, so MDoc and MDoc Reader. So MDoc is a generalized name for MDL. MDoc Reader is a generalized name for MDL Reader. And this just sets out some of the aspects of how the MDoc is authenticated and how the reader could be authenticated. Pretty sure the reader authentication requires the readers to be registered. We haven't seen large scale deployments of not registered readers. That we'll see how that plays out in the marketplace. Next slide. Then just a couple lines on the certificates, not really saying anything on that slide. And last slide. This is what is not in HDO 13 Part 5. This is the punchline. This is the whole presentation. And this is where we as a broader community have the opportunity to influence and shape what goes into HTML 13 part 7, the day 2 stuff, what goes into 23220, the building blocks. This stuff is not specified in HTML 13 part 5 because of scope constraints, right? Scope was specified so that it could be published. And things got pushed into day 2, because they were either not immediately needed for the in-person presentation mode, which was the first mode to be defined, or they weren't really sure of how to solve the complex issues that involved them. But we're working on them now as the ISO worker. That is my presentation.
Thanks, Andrew, for the great overview and for
very, very quick overview.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's clearly we could go down this rabbit hole. But I want to get to the queue, and we've got about 11 minutes for a conversation discussion. So Adrian, you're up first. Over to you.
Yes. My question goes back to the beginning of your talk and the very end here, where I'll summarize it as there's a wallet focus for in-person presentation. And as you just said, everything else is in phase two, day two. And my question has to do with participation in this process in the same way that people like me are able to participate either in W3C or IETF standards in order to represent the interest other than the government interest that seems to dominate what's going on here in the ISO process. Because, sure. So that was basically my question is, and obviously I'm thinking that that could be leverage for us to move, you know, to as part of this day two stuff to have it either be in W3C or IETF for this reason.
Highly unlikely. But ISO, the members of ISO are the national standards body of the countries that have chosen to become members. The U.S. has a national standards body, ANSI, and they have a process for getting individuals and companies accredited to be representatives at ISO. That is the process. It's always been the process. It is not different. So if anyone in a country wishes to be at the table, there is a path. Some of those paths are not free. And you have to represent the national standards body at the table. That's the ISO organization, right? That's not going to change anytime soon. There are very good reasons to have ISO the way it's structured. There are things that ISO cannot do. But that's an organizational change question that, unfortunately, it is the way it is. So I have no good answer for you, except to have more sessions like this to influence the thinking and direction of people at the table.
So this could be an opportunity for us one way or another.
That's why I'm here. It's absolutely an opportunity. Yes.
Thank you.
Andrew, you're here speaking to our group to help with this. Is there like a vice versa of that where folks from our community can, I don't know, influence the thinking with the ISO? Or is it, I guess my question is, I'm sorry, I'm totally jumping the queue. I'm sorry, Manu. Is where can these conversations happen? Or, and I'm not saying just one place, like it's clear they need to happen multiple places.
So I'm not sure what the best way to answer is. So the ISO working groups are basically defined by their scope. It is possible to have guests come to speak at the different meetings. So if, you know, if there is a desire to do that, we can set something up to schedule, to come and present to the meeting. There are people that are actually in the decentralized, identity world and verifiable credentials world at the table. So it's not like I'm the only person. You know, having concrete proposals is awesome. So I'm looking forward to seeing the work that, Matterspruce and Digital Bazaar have put together, because, it will help the discussion. I don't know what to say. I mean, there's, you know, I'm making this outreach because I feel that this is an important connection to make. There's others through Secure Technology Alliance. There's connections through AMVA. There's connections at each of the national bodies. And, you know, Cantera, we've started a new work group to talk about, you know, privacy expectations, data protection expectations of issuers, verifiers, and app producers. So, and everyone at the ISO work group, is doing what we can to get the word out and get engagement, as, you know, little pieces together that we can do. I know that's not an answer. But.
No, actually, it's not a horrible answer. So, I mean, I think also we're having this conversation, and that's, I think, a really good place for us to be right now. There's a lot worse places we could be. This is not a bad place. Okay, Manu, you're up next. Sorry about jumping the queue.
No problem whatsoever. Two things. So, three things. Andrew, thank you so much for being here and taking the initiative to reach out. You do this on a very regular basis, and I think we're very appreciative of you and that you do that. You mentioned earlier about the MSO object and scratching your head on how that fits in. I don't have a good answer for you there, other than there are ways to make it work, but they require some fairly detailed conversation with people that are implementing, you know, on the MDoc side, and those sorts of conversations have been very elusive over the past several years, right? So it's really difficult to even get into that level of discussion if you're not in the ISO group, and, you know, many of us are not going to be able to find our way into that group. And that is one of the – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Before you go on. So anyone that wants to talk details about the technology implementation, reach out to me directly. I have some friends. So the discussion wouldn't be in the ISO group, but, you know, all the implementers, all the vendors of driver's licenses are working with the specification and so on. So that is another way to have the discussions. And, you know, I don't know if it would influence the specifications, but it's possible to find out more about how it's being implemented.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you for that. The last thing I wanted to mention was aligned with what Heather was asking, which is, what is the best way for us to engage? Clearly what we've been doing is not working. So, for example, the ISO, the working group was an official liaison listed in the verifiable credentials activity. The path, for whatever reason, on both sides was not used until the very end. Like, we finally got the version 1.1 spec over through the people that put the ISO group together, and they're reviewing it now. So my expectation is that we are going to continue that liaison activity between the verifiable credentials working group and the and ISO on MDL and MDoc and that sort of thing. So that'll be one way of getting kind of some communication channel working. The other, I think, activity we're going to try and do is what we just did, which is release a technical example of expressing a mobile driver's license using verifiable credentials and doing it publicly so that everybody can engage, so that we don't have the ISO, you know, the ISO barrier to get past to engage. If this is a CCG work item, then it's completely public. Anyone can engage in it. And we can also take it through W3C, to ISO, through kind of that official channel. So I think that's what we're kind of proposing on how can we improve the way we've been communicating. Do you have any thoughts or modifications, to that approach?
Actually. So the liaison part, ISO works on physical meetings, paper, and formality, because it's international and there's complexity involved. The most effective way for a liaison arrangement to work is if you have an individual on CCG that will represent CCG at the ISO working group table, like officially as a liaison, incoming liaison officer, and then bring back the information directly as a liaison officer. I'm not sure how many people there are in CCG that sit on the ISO work group. I'm certainly one of them, and I'm willing to have that discussion, to see if you know, use of the formal liaison process could be better by having designated individuals. On the other one, how can we get to the point of actually doing interop testing? Having a test suite is excellent, right? So now implementers should be able to interact and see what's going on. Sorry, I was reading the chat while I was trying to talk. Let's try stuff out, I guess, is the thing. All the vendors are interested in interop testing because everyone, not just the vendors, we all win together when the specs work as broadly as possible, right? I know that's a general statement, but it is actually true. Right. If the mobile driver's license is not usable wherever people want to use it, then there's not much point in having one. So if different formats are needed, different transmission methods are needed, let's make them. Right. Very simple to say, very hard to actually do, but let's keep working together and finding the spot, right? I don't know if that sounds flippant, but it is, I think we're making steps in the right direction.
Thanks, Andrew. Definitely very appreciative of you coming here today and opening up this conversation, that I think is just the beginning of us understanding how to work together better and influence ISO and just generally be supportive so that we can have the specs work together, which is, I think, the goal that we all have. So thank you for coming and presenting on this today.
You're welcome.
Juan, thank you so much for scribing. This will conclude our CCG meeting for today. We can pick up this conversation to discuss Manu's test suite work item in the near future, and we'll see you next week, where Carrie's going to give us an update on all the interesting things happening in the VC Edu Task Force. So join us same time next week.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.